For a message this morning, this goes back a number of years. On my notes, I have 2021, so that's quite a while. And sometimes when I look at notes from 5 years ago, I find that perhaps my thought patterns are a little different than what they were. Sometimes I wish I would have said something a little differently. When I read over these, it didn't really change very much. So I don't know if that's something that gives you any courage or not. I guess you don't even know what I'm going to talk about. But I do find this is still a burden, and I hope that I can share it with you in such a way that it makes sense and give you some of it as well. Turn with me to start with to Matthew chapter 16. And what I was talking about was this is a series that I started based on a chapel talk that I gave at Bible school a number of years ago. The concerns that I was sharing with the young people that I felt were a negative trend, and so that's not a good way to start, I suppose, but it did seem to me that it was negative. And we want to finish with something positive, but to understand what needs to change, we have to understand what needs to change. And I believe that one of the things that has helped us as a group of believers over the years, the particular group that we're part of here, is a wish to put simplicity and humility into practice. Now, that's an odd thing to think about when you think about practical humility, because we would say that's more of an attitude, but we believe that the way we conduct our lives says something about what we believe. In fact, that may be the truest test of what we believe. What we actually do says what we actually believe. We can say anything, but until we actually act on that, it's up for grabs whether we believe it or not. And so I would like to start out, like I said, in Matthew 16, verse 24. Then said Jesus unto his disciples, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever shall will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? I'm going to just break off reading there. Go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 9 for another passage. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, we're going to break into the end of this chapter and start at verse 24. Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. So these verses, Jesus speaking and Paul writing, seem to illustrate something that I think to be true, and that is that our bodies in the world are meant to be viewed with suspicion. Let's say it that way. The appetites of our flesh are to be kept under, the way Paul would say it. It is to be denied, the way Jesus would say it, because there's something that's going on there that can lead to destruction if we don't. Western Christianity, and maybe even more than just Western Christianity, has taught us that our flesh and our spirit are so separate that you can do bad things in your flesh and your spirit will be fine. I do not agree with that. I believe that they interact with each other much more closely than that, And that is a basis of which we begin to understand that our flesh must somehow be denied. A little bit of history, and I know that this is painting with a very wide brush, and we're not going to be able to cover all the history, but when you go back to early Christians, I'm talking very early Christians, Stephen, James, those men, they were ones who gave their lives for the faith of Jesus Christ. This sets a stage that you can follow all the way through the times of the early church into the Middle Ages, even into the Reformation period, where people understood that cross-bearing may have literally meant a cross. They probably understood something about dying for their faith in a way that we don't understand. And it's not surprising that we would be tempted to spiritualize everything because it's not happening physically. But if you can somehow imagine with me that this is baked into, like, the proof of who you are is whether or not you're willing to die for it. Remember, we were saying what you do proves what you believe. And so if you say you're a Christian and Caesar's goons come after you and suddenly you recant, well, were you really a Christian or not? That's kind of debatable. But if you took it all the way to the end and you died for that faith, well, that's proof that you really truly believed it. That's how these Christians were thinking. And this is something that goes all the way through, like I said, even the time of Reformation, and probably still goes on today in areas that we don't live. Now, when the Mennonites moved to America, they came as persecuted people. They were being chased around Switzerland, Germany, other places by various different people, usually reformers and sometimes Catholics. And I'm not here to vilify anybody. They were products of their time. And yet there was this group of people that said, we will die for what we believe. And so they moved to get away from it. Well, that sometimes they were expelled. They were told to leave. And whenever William Penn was given this land over here, and there was asylum offered, I guess you could call it, a group of people moved over here. When they get here, though, suddenly they realize that they aren't being chased around. Well, now who are you? That's going to change the way you think about yourself. If the proof of your Christianity was that you're willing to die for it and nobody's killing you for it, are you a Christian? That's actually a profound question. It's one that you have to answer. And so they answered it and said, well, maybe you don't have to die to be a Christian, but maybe what we need to do is be humble because Jesus was humble. We need to be simple people because Jesus was simple. And so we follow Jesus that way. And so they came up with this humility motif, if you want to call it that. And so they voluntarily tried to live in simplicity and humility. Now, again, painting with a very wide brush, I'm not here to say that these people got it all right, but what I am trying to do is put some context of history around what's happening, and if we trace our lineage to these particular people, then we want to know what happened with them. So between the time of these people deciding to adopt this lifestyle of voluntary humility and simplicity, practically put into shoe leather, there's different ways they thought of doing that. They had a lot of help, though. They had things like revolutionary wars. They had things like civil wars. They had things like world wars and depressions. They had a lot of help to stay simple and humble. And I think maybe this is just me, but I think it's probably more than just me. We look at them and we still kind of admire that. The ability to live with just the basics. And we don't have to go back that far, but people who came out of the Great Depression were people who were very, very, very frugal. So much so that Well, probably one of the carryovers of that is that your parents taught you to eat all the food on your plate. Throwing away food is an awful thing for most of us. It's hard for us to do. And it goes back to this frugality and simplicity. It's not a bad thing, but it is definitely part of it, of being very careful with the resources that they have. And again, it helps keep things simple. We talk about pioneering people, mission-minded people who moved from Lancaster County to Pensacola and were willing to live in cement block houses with no air conditioning. Some of them were your ancestors. And we say that was good. That was admirable. Are y'all willing to do that? It's a question that I ask myself, and now I'm asking you to ask yourself. Well, through the course of time, our lives have gotten quite easy, have they not? And we've been influenced by that original comment that I made about splitting our spirit and our flesh. We've come to understand things like faith alone saves us. There's nothing we can do to earn salvation. And while this is theologically correct, I think that if you take the faith alone, mental assent only salvation, it will erode a practical Christianity. It separates the spirit from the body. And by the way, if you want to think about this thing of the spirit and the body being separated, it has also given fruit in the transgender sort of thing. If your body and your spirit are two different things, well, then you might be a female spirit trapped in a male body. You follow that logic? I think there's something to it. And so if you can somehow believe in Jesus, but you don't actually have to do anything to live in loyalty to Jesus, well, what's the point of being practical with your faith? There is no point if it's true that your flesh and your spirit are that separate. I've noticed that collectively we have become so sophisticated that we like to make fun of people who try to live out practical simplicity. I do it. I've heard other people do it. Whenever we're back in Lancaster County and you run up behind a buggy or something like that, it's annoying. Right? Why do they have to be that way? Doesn't anybody know that cars are here to stay? That it's perfectly fine if you drive at 65 miles an hour instead of 15 behind a horse? Besides, it's dangerous. People get killed that way. And anybody knows that that doesn't save you. Take that a little closer. A number of years ago, there was a story in some sort of Sunday school publication. I forget exactly where it was. But there was a story that went something like this, that there was a young child in a home who got some shoes that had some marks on them that the parents believed should be marked out so that their shoes would be more humble. I know that that's easy to make fun of. That's very easy to mock. And I heard some mockery of that story. Because anybody knows, who has any sense at all, knows that black shoes don't earn you salvation. That a little bit of white on the side of your shoe is probably okay. And so it's just silly. Don't those people read their Bibles? Don't they understand? We're very sophisticated at doing things like that. But I wonder if we're sophisticated enough to see the connection between I don't have to wear black shoes to be a Christian, and going all the way out and saying I can still be a Christian and do XYZ. Somewhere, if you were to somehow chart that out, and all the way over here is you have to drive horses and buggies to be a Christian, and all the way over here is I can do whatever I want and still be a Christian. At some point, self-denial has to happen practically, or you will be guilty of Christ denial somewhere in there. And I don't know if I understand that completely. And that's why we have things like brotherhoods to help us work through that. Because we believe that our faith will be something that is done in the flesh, in reality. So what do we mean by self-denial? Well, denying ourselves, I believe, has to be a choice. Where there is no choice, there is really no denial. So if you're starving in the middle of the Sahara and you're hungry for a candy bar, but there's no food to be had within miles and miles, you're not really denying yourself a candy bar. There's no option. You don't have the choice. But if you're standing at the checkout and you know that it's probably not a good idea to spend your money because your money needs to be spent for something else, or maybe it's just not healthy because you're suffering from, I don't know if candy bars are ever healthy, but anyway, if you're making the choice while staring at the candy bar and you choose not to take it, that's self-denial. It's because you made a choice to deny yourself something very basic. Can you eat a candy bar and be a Christian? Well, that's not the question. We're asking ourselves, what does self-denial look like? I believe that denying ourselves, according to Scripture, and we could look at what Jesus said about what will you give in exchange for your soul? Are you gonna, those that want to save their life are going to lose it. Those that lose their life are going to find it. Paul says, I bring under my body and keep it in subjection. And so I believe biblically that it teaches us that denying ourselves is an exchange. When we deny ourselves, practically speaking, in temporal and secular things, this makes sense. If you want to use your money to buy a piece of real estate, then you need to limit how much money you spend on candy bars. You're exchanging immediate gratification for something that you want that's a little more lasting and a little more solid than the candy bar. And if you want to lose weight or you want to become more fit or whatever, you might deny yourself a helping of cake and ice cream at the birthday party because you value that goal of less weight or more fitness more than you value the taste of ice cream in your mouth, which is really the only place it's good, by the way. Have you ever thought of that? Once you swallow it, it's not good anymore, so you have to keep eating more. So my point is that denial is an exchange. You trade one thing for something that's what you deem more valuable. And that's just the way it is. And so spiritually, of course, we look at, well, these young ladies here this morning and all of us who are baptized, they promise that they're going to... How does it say it? Now it slips my mind. Let me look at the vowels. Renounce, that's the word. Yes, are you willing to renounce Satan, the world, all the works of darkness, and your own selfish desires? So we give those things up because we want the exchange of something lasting, eternal life. I believe also that every time we make a choice, and I don't want those of you who are sensitive to overthink this, but for those of you who are a little more hard-hearted, you need to think about this. Every time we make a choice, we are making an exchange, one way or the other. We are either following the world and the flesh of the devil, or we're following the Spirit of God. And yes, I think that's even true when we decide what color of shirt we're going to wear, in the sense that there's always a motivation for what we do. There always is. And so We talked about that a little bit in Sunday school. What is the motivation? And so every choice we make has a motivation behind it. Some of them are so automatic and so subtle that we don't hardly know how to think about them. And so when you go to the closet and you make a choice whether you're going to wear the white shirt or the blue shirt to church that morning, there's something going on in your head to motivate that choice. It just is that way. And the same is true for whether you pick a certain kind of ice cream. Now, I don't necessarily think that you have to pray about which choice you're going to make, although that's not a bad idea. I don't want to paralyze anybody. I just want you to think about the fact that our choices come from some motive somewhere along the way. Something mattered. 2 Timothy 2, 3, and 4, you don't have to turn there, but Paul says, "Thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier." So he's using the soldier analogy to show that denying ourselves of the affairs of this life keeps us from being entangled with the affairs of this life. Titus 2, again, you can turn there if you want, but you don't have to, 11 through 14. The grace of God that bringeth salvation hath appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world, looking for that blessed hope and the glorious appearing of the great God and our Savior Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us that he might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto himself a peculiar people, zealous of good works. These things speak and exhort and rebuke with all authority. Let no man despise thee. When we make choices of denying ourselves, we are focusing on the spiritual. If we choose not to deny ourselves, then we are focusing on the fleshly. And we will move either toward the world, the flesh, and the devil, or we will move toward God. And it's that simple. I believe our actions inform our spirits and vice versa. Now, the title that I gave this message was Practical Simplicity and Humility, and so far we haven't really talked about simplicity and humility very much at all, nor have we made it very practical yet. And so far, all we've been talking about is self-denial. Why are we talking about self-denial? Well, because I believe that without self-denial, practical simplicity and humility isn't going to be part of our life. Now, there is a movement in the world today called minimalism. And I would like to talk about minimalism just a little bit. The idea goes something like this, that we will be simple and we will not consume more than we absolutely need because we just think that it's a spiritual exercise and that material things don't bring any happiness anyway. And they kind of do it, at least from my little bit of reading into their blogs and things, they kind of do it just because they have a form of spirituality. It's not necessarily Christian. And the reason I bring that up is because sometimes we can maybe get into the trap of worshiping minimalism for the sake of minimalism, or we can worship simplicity just for the sake of simplicity. And that's not what this is about. However, it is interesting to me to read what they're saying. Material things don't bring happiness. True or false? Well, that's true. It is actually a true statement that they're making. And so they have some things that are about right. But I think they fall short of the Christian goal of then using the time and the resources and the things that have been saved and foregone for the sake of the kingdom. And that's the part that I would like us to get to, is to think about becoming practically simple and humble people so that we are free from the entanglements of the world and we can become more useful to God. That's the goal. Not just so we can save the planet. Well, that's another whole subject. So let's make this even more practical than we have already. I have a couple of points here. I believe that to live out the ideal of self-denial in a practical and humble and simple way, there is one more ingredient that we need to think about, and that is contentment. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, starting at verse 6, "But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and have pierced themselves through with many sorrows." This passage is a pretty classic one, and we want to talk about contentment. And contentment is a subject that's larger than one point, but it's definitely part of being practically simple. If we're constantly greedy, constantly looking for gain, constantly trying to better our position in the world, constantly coveting, your life is far from simple. It's quite complex at that point. And so understanding contentment, and I don't know if I can answer Nate's question of where does contentment and the desire to grow and become better in the kingdom, I don't think I have an answer for that. But I think we all know when we're being greedy and covetous, don't we? The Spirit will be faithful in nudging us when we do that. So I have a couple of things here, a couple of things to think about practically. And this is not all inclusive. It's simply to try to help you start thinking about where my mind has been on this subject. And like I said, I read these notes, and I haven't really changed them from about 5 years ago, so it's still real to me. So maybe, let's go back to talking about these silly black shoes. Maybe black shoes won't make us righteous. However, at some point, we have to understand that we have enough shoes. We live in a culture that says you can have however many you want, as long as you can afford it. So we have the potential to buy so many shoes. Maybe the whole idea behind saying black shoes might have just been to say, at least we'll cut out the white ones and the gray ones and the blue ones and the brown ones and the purple ones and the neon green. I mean, like, maybe that's what was behind that motivation, perhaps. I don't know. I wasn't there. But at least it makes a little bit of sense. You're at least cutting out and putting into practice an idea of taking something that could be very complex and moving it to something very simple when you at least eliminate however many colors on the spectrum. So, should we mock somebody who chooses to be simple when they just limit their choices? Is that just silly? Maybe that actually is helping them to understand something more about living for Jesus. And I don't think that it's wise for us to think that we are somehow more wise when we complicate our lives with so many choices that really, really, really don't matter. They really don't matter. If you're a young man here this morning, I want to talk to you a little bit. When I say young, I don't know what that means. Younger than me, I guess. You know, young man, there is a limit of justifiable things to do to your truck. And you know that the more you do things to your possessions, the more they will trap you and pull your loyalties away from Jesus Christ. Do you know that? I hope you know that, because what we put our heart into is where our heart will be. And this is true for everything. Trucks are just one example. And this is true for anything that maybe girls don't buy trucks, but whatever it is that girls buy. I understand a need for recreation, but is it truly recreation when you come home after tearing up a mud hole and you're tireder than when you left and you spent more money doing that than if you would have volunteered to help your neighbor or simply just gone on a hike? is that truly recreation? Is that truly simple? Is that truly humble? I ask you to ask yourself those questions. I don't think they are. I don't know how they can draw our souls toward God, and I don't know how they rest us and recreate us. Those are just some things for you young men to think about. And there's many, many, many more. You don't have to stop with those two. You can go on. And young ladies, I remember hearing a young lady just recently say that preachers should not try to talk to the young ladies because they can get the point when it's talking to the guys, and so we shouldn't even try. All right, I'm not going to try. But I am going to say this. I suspect that what motivates you to wear cute sweaters and have 1,000 of them is probably the same spirit that motivates a young man to do things to his truck. I think it's the same spirit. And so take that to wherever you need to take it. And remember that popularity and beauty is deceitful. And if you're doing things to try to gain attention and popularity and all of that, you are feeding a fleshly appetite that needs to be denied in order for your soul to grow toward God. So now let's talk about older ones. Who's older? I guess it's just people that are older than me. I'm exempt from all of this. No, that's not true. I'm not true. I didn't mean that at all. But when we're older, we can look at the silliness and some of the things that I just mentioned that young people do and say, oh, well, we don't do that. But I submit to you this morning, older men, that we are not exempt. We need to know when enough is enough. We have to know that. We have to understand that enough income is enough income, enough acreage is enough acreage, enough business contracts is enough business contracts, enough social media is enough. Business building and success can become a trap that will take our hearts away just in as quickly as the young man's truck. It's just a shift in what becomes important. And I believe that it can be said that sometimes our businesses and empires that we build have a hard, hard time fitting into simple and humble. We are called to have to give, not to have to hoard. And when we expand and when we invest, it must be looked at with the perspective of how can this further my work in the kingdom of heaven, not how can this make it better so that when I get old, I'll have tons of money to retire on. The kingdom of heaven interests need to be the focus, not my interests. And so when we build a business, how are we going to use that opportunity and the money that it generates? How are we going to use that? Are we going to just build an empire, or are we going to actually try to model the grace of giving and contentment to the younger people? Younger people have definitely learned from us how to live the good life. But have they learned how to deny the carnal will and sinful desire? I want to talk about food just a little bit. We live in a time that we have so much food. And I like good food. I really, really do. But it's very easy in our culture and in our time to overindulge in food. We can eat when we're not hungry. We can eat just to make ourselves feel better emotionally. Maybe, I'm not sure, but maybe the discipline of fasting would be easier if all you had to turn down was rice and beans for the 10th time that month. Maybe that would be easier. I don't know, because that's not my experience. We eat well, and we have a variety of things. I'm not saying that we shouldn't enjoy good food, but what I am saying is that there is an increasing obsession with food that creates gluttons and anorexics, and it's in our churches. And so a simpler concept of food might not be such a bad idea. Maybe we should just tame that animal a little bit. High-tech communications have a way of cluttering up our lives and drawing us away from God. In all seriousness, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm asking this in all seriousness. How many apps do you actually have to have that do the exact same thing? In all seriousness. I don't understand why we have to. And it's hard to delete apps because I might miss out on something. Maybe it'll make it inconvenient for somebody to reach out to me because, well, they only use WhatsApp and I don't want to use WhatsApp. Or they only use Telegram and I don't want to use Telegram. That's just one example. In the communication realm, take that and apply it to every other app on your phone and think about it. How many, again, this is just a practical way to think more simply. I firmly believe that everything we add to our life clutters it up. And if we're going to make room for our spirit to pursue God, then we have to think about being practically simple. I just think that's true. And you know, young people, you don't actually have to communicate with your peers every minute of every day. Many, many generations before you have survived to adulthood without that luxury. You will be fine. You'll be fine. The point of trying to make all of this practical is to help us make intentional choices. I've been accused of leaning toward asceticism. I don't know if that's true or not. It could be true. And I know that this message may sound unbalanced, that you can think of maybe 10 yeah buts to every point I made. You can probably do that. But I didn't intend to preach a balanced message this morning. I did not intend to do that. And maybe, I personally tend toward asceticism. I don't know. But I do know that our culture is not. And I do know that in my lifetime, I think I've observed a shift away from being practically simple and humble people into just more stuff, more access to information, more access to everything that clutters our life up and drowns out the voice of the Spirit. I think that's true. And I'm calling us back to, what are we going to do about that? Are we going to practically, do we really believe that these things are cluttering our life up? Do we intend to act on our belief? Or is this going to be one more thing that sounds good in the brain, but in the flesh, it just isn't going to work? And besides, we're surrounded with the teaching that it's just silly to deny yourself. God wants you to have a good time, and it's just silly to deny yourself. Well, Jesus seems to say something different, and I believe that in our day we need to apply that. So in conclusion, I believe that every day we are faced with opportunities to indulge in the flesh and pull our souls away from God, or we can exchange that and make space for God to work in our lives and move us closer to Him. Let's kneel for prayer.